Folks, I'd like to call you the order to the Board of Adjustments meeting tonight. And I'll turn it over to Bob. Would you give us a roll call?
Okay. Dave Clemenson.
Present.
Tom Gideon.
Present.
Tony Mullen.
Present.
Mark Weiss.
Here.
And Dave Nelson is not here. We have established a quorum.
All right. And would you give us the explanation for the public hearing procedures, please?
I'd like to welcome you this evening to the November 20th, 2013 Board of Adjustment public hearing being held in order to hear an appeal request and two variance requests. The Board of Adjustment hearing process is governed by the provisions of the Missouri Revised Statutes, the Taney County Development Guidance Code, and the adopted Board of Adjustment bylaws. Public hearings are held for each variance or appeal request which is filed with the Planning Department. At this time, I would like to place the Taney County Development Guidance Code into evidence as Exhibit A. The staff report for each case is Exhibit B. The staff file, including all pertinent information for each case, is Exhibit C. And the Board of Adjustment bylaws is Exhibit D for all the cases to be heard at this public hearing. A staff report will be read for each application, followed by a video and any questions for staff. As the chairman had indicated, if you do wish to comment upon any of these applications, you must sign in at the front of the room. Anyone wishing to speak either for or against a request must be sworn in and will therefore be providing sworn testimony. Registration for comment will cease before the hearing begins. When it's your opportunity to provide sworn testimony, your name will be called by the Board of Adjustment Chairman. Please walk to the podium at the front of the room to address the board. All comments and questions are to be addressed to the board, not to anyone in attendance. All speakers who are not a party to the case shall be limited to 5 minutes unless additional time is granted by the chairman. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. And Mark, would you give us the governing statutes that governs our meeting?
Per the requirements of the Missouri Revised Statutes, the Board of Adjustment shall have the following powers, and it shall be its duty to hear and decide appeals where it is alleged there is error of law in any order, requirement, decision, or determination made by an administrative official in the enforcement of county zoning regulations. 2. In exercising the above powers, the Board may reverse or affirm wholly or partly, or may modify the order, requirement, decision, or determination appealed from, and may take such order, requirement, decision, or determination as ought to be made, and to that end shall have the powers of the officer from whom the appeal is taken.
And excuse me,
you bet.
Mark, and if you would read number 2 and number 3, what talks about the variance requests.
Yep, I was looking for that on there.
Okay.
To hear and decide all matters referred to it, which is required to determine under the zoning regulations adopted by the County Commission as herein provided. 3. Where by reason of exceptional narrowness, shallowness, shape, or topography, or other extraordinary or exceptional situation or conditions of a specific piece of property, the strict application of any regulation adopted under the sections 64.845 to 64.880 would result in a peculiar and exceptional difficulties to or exceptional and demonstrable undue hardship upon the owner of the property as an unreasonable deprivation of use as distinguished from the mere grant of a privilege to authorize, upon an appeal relating to the property, a variance from the strict application so as to relieve the demonstrable difficulties or hardships, provided the relief can be granted without substantial detriment to the public good and without substantially impairing the intent, purpose, and integrity of the zone plan as embodied in the zoning regulations and map.
Thank you. And we have 3 cases tonight. Bob, would you give us a staff report for Bee Creek Partners, LLC? Thank you.
This is case number 2013-5A. This is an appeal of the Planning Commission decision on the Layton Auto Service. The applicant is Bee Creek Partners, LLC. The representatives on this are Crystal Howell, Jim Walker, Brett Johnson, and Hugh Smith. This is the property in question. The property is located at 1421 Bee Creek Road, Branson, Missouri. It's in the Branson Township, Section 21, Township 23, Range 21. The applicant, Bee Creek Partners, LLC, is seeking to appeal the Planning Commission approval of Division 3 Permit 2013-18, authorizing the relocation of the existing Leighton Auto Service business from 282 Wabash Road to a new location at 1421 Bee Creek Road. The existing location is essentially here on this parcel, and this is the newly approved location. On November 17th, the Planning Commission approved Division 3 Special Use Permit 2008-63, authorizing Gail Leighton to convert an existing 1,680-square-foot building located at 282 Wabash Road into a commercial auto repair business. The permit was issued as a special use permit. Therefore, the permit was issued specifically to Mr. Leighton and cannot be transferred without Planning Commission approval. Per the provisions of the Development Guidance Code, the special use permit is also not to be used to establish commercial compatibility for or with any future land use change applications. The approximately 9.8-acre tract currently contains both the Leighton's private residence and also the Leighton Auto Services business. On January 28, 2011, Lot 1A was created via the replat of Lot 1 of the Snaden subdivision, and this Lot 1A is of course, the parcel currently in question. On September 16th, the Planning Commission approved Division 3 Permit 2013-18 by unanimous vote, again, basically authorizing the relocation of Leighton Auto Service from its present location at 282 Wabash Lane to the property located at 1421 Bee Creek Road. And once again, upon that relocation, the 282 Wabash Road address would revert back to its previous residential use. Division 3 Permit 2013-18 was approved by a unanimous vote of the Planning Commission with a total of 12 conditions. The Leighton Auto Service business will be served by Branson Municipal Sewer, and this is the location of the existing sewer line, and also Public Water Supply District Number 3. The Leighton Auto Service business will be accessed via a single entrance and exit point, as indicated on the site plan, and also basically per the parking provisions of the Development Guidance Code, the application would require 18 parking spaces, as have been indicated on the site plan. The adjoining property immediately to the north is single-family residential, with multifamily residential being located further north. The adjoining property immediately to the south is Stinger Road, with commercial storage, and also further to the south some single-family residential. The adjoining property immediately to the east is Bee Creek Road, and also the Boys and Girls Club and a single-family residence. And the property to the west is basically Yellow Jacket Road and also the multifamily residential and vacant property. In review, the applicant, Bee Creek Partners, LLC, is seeking to appeal the Planning Commission approval of Division 3 Permit 2013-18, authorizing the relocation of the existing Leighton Auto Service basically from its present location at 282 Wabash Road to the new location at 1421 Bee Creek Road. The applicant is appealing the decision of the Planning Commission based upon what they feel is a need for additional traffic, environmental, parking, and noise studies. The Planning Commission approved Division 3 Permit 2012, and that should be 18, by a unanimous vote with a total of 12 conditions, based upon the belief that this proposed development would comply with the absolute and relative policies of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. the conditions were placed upon this permit in order to mitigate the concerns of the neighboring property owners and also to ensure compliance with the absolute relative policies of the Development Guidance Code. The staff recommendation on this, if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this appeal request, the Planning Commission approval of the decision of record for Division 3 permit 2013-18 shall be reversed and shall be considered null and void. The following requirements shall apply unless revised by the board. Basically, the decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days or the approval shall expire. And we've got a brief video of the property in question. And of course, this is the property that is in question. And we've done a quick 360. Here's the adjoining commercial storage facility. And of course, Bee Creek Road. And some single-family residential property, and the Boys and Girls Club. And some additional single-family residential property as well.
Bob, while we got you there, I know we have this in our packet, but for sake of the audience, would you put up the 12 items
Yes.
that was recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission? And it's more towards our back of the packet.
Okay. Do you want me to go through those?
I think we can...
Okay.
Look at them, all right.
Okay. And here's the other, the remaining.
All right. Any questions of the staff and the board members? All right. Thank you. And I would call Brian Wade, Randy Renier, Crystal Howe, and Gail Layton to stand, and I'll swear you in. Please raise your right hand. You promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you. Have a seat. And Mr. Wade, you seem to be on the front of the agenda as usual.
Thank you, Mr. Clements, and I appreciate you. Your willingness to listen to me talk once again. I represent Bee Creek Partners, the entity that's filed the appeal in this case. And as you were told, Mr. Layton is moving an existing... I'm sorry, Bob, could you pull up the overall site?
Okay.
I think it was one of the original...
The site plan, or...
Yeah, that's that.
Okay.
That
Sorry.
Will work.
Okay.
I may refer to that. The Planning and Zoning Commission approved a Division 3 permit for the change of or the transfer of the Layton Auto Service to this new location. When the staff reviewed the application, of course, the staff did a relative scoring according to the program. And basically, I've got two arguments, and I've set them forth in a letter that I forwarded to you all. I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but there are basically two issues in that letter that we felt the Planning Commission did not follow the ordinances because this particular location is incompatible with the existing property uses. As Bob pointed out when he identified the property, and in his report, he indicated that the property surrounding the area, with the exception of the mini storage, which of course does not promote traffic or much additional traffic to the area is predominantly residential. The Boys and Girls Club, of course, I guess you could call that a commercial use, but of course that's for meetings with children and parents, et cetera. So I think everyone would agree it's a predominantly residential use there. In the code itself, and I cited to the appendix P, it identifies some compatible uses for rural residential use, and it cites some specific examples for compatible uses. Of course, auto service is not one. There are other provisions in the code which specifically identify auto repair service as a commercial use and compatible with commercial usages. The section 4.48 concerns home occupations and specifically excludes auto repair service as being used as a home occupation. So it's pretty clear the development guidance code presumes that auto repair service and residential are not presumptively compatible. And there's really no other way to read it. If you look at the staff's relative scoring of this particular project, it received a very low score. It received a 2 according to the staff report. But in that scoring, it received a plus 5 for economic development under the theory that it creates economic development and part of that goes to jobs created. But as Mr. Ashley pointed out, this is a transfer of an existing business, which is already in existence. So it's not creating new jobs. It's a transfer of one business from one location to another in the county. So if you took that plus 5 away, it's going to receive a negative score, which accurately shows it's incompatible with this particular area. Now, when the Planning Commission reviewed this project, it was very concerned, and there was a lot of discussion about the traffic at that intersection, because there was testimony about the sight line on Bee Creek. People were speeding. I mean, you've heard those comments before when evaluating these projects. But here's the thing: Stinger Road. There was not a professional sketch presented to the Planning Commission when they reviewed it. This plan that you see on the overhead, and I've marked that as Exhibit C, but it's already in the record. So, or excuse me, Exhibit 3, but I think it's already in the record. Correct, Bob?
Yes.
This sketch was given to the Planning Commission after the meeting. They didn't have it at the meeting. They had a different sketch. They had a hand-drawn sketch, which was similar, but not as detailed and not as precise. And so in the Division 3 permit that was issued, it says at Condition 11, the commercial drive shall be a minimum of 32 feet in width. This particular sketch shows 27 feet off Stinger Road. But in the Division 3 permit, it doesn't identify which particular road the access is supposed to come off of. Okay? It doesn't say Bee Creek, and it doesn't say Stinger. It just says the commercial drive shall be a minimum of 32 feet in width. There was a lot of discussion at the Planning Commission meeting about whether the access should come off Bee Creek or Stinger. And the general consensus, in my opinion, was that Bee Creek was much more dangerous because the sight lines were pretty bad as they existed, and it was kind of difficult to see left or right coming out of Stinger or turning off of Bee Creek onto Stinger. Lots of residential folks there, lots of people living in the apartments, lots of people living in the houses to the north. So they all felt like Bee Creek was a bad way to go. And I think everybody agreed with that. But I've got Exhibit 4, Benita, that I wanted to give them. And I've got two copies. And Exhibit 4... I'll just tell you what it is, and I don't know if I need to get your permission to offer Exhibit 4 into the record or how you want to do that. But
well, are you talking about this fax that you sent today?
No, sir. I gave these to Benita.
Here's Exhibit 4.
or there's two copies.
I'll tell you that that's just a compilation of certified records relating to Stinger Road and a road easement agreement on Stinger Road.
Before we go any further,
yes, sir.
We're supposed to have this information at least 10 days before the meeting is to be heard.
Yes.
And that obviously is not the case. When did you receive it?
Well, this is a recorded document, so I guess it was publicly available to me and you and everybody else. And presumptively the Planning Commission when they decided or made the decision of record. And the reason that, I'll let you finish before.
Okay.
Let me tell you why I gave you copies of it.
Yeah.
At the Planning Commission, it was a little unclear what the Planning Commission felt about the access point, other than it was unsafe on Bee Creek, and there was some discussion about whether it should be on Stinger and the distance and those kinds of things. Mr. Layton agreed to provide a sketch plan after the fact, which he did, and that's in the packet. And that's on the overhead. The problem is Stinger Road is a private easement. So the reason I gave you the document is because the public records show that being an easement that was granted to the land by the landowner to Bee Creek Partners to access their multifamily development behind it. So the only use for that particular easement is for access to the multifamily. So what the way that happened, according to the road easement agreement that I gave you, there was no road there when it was platted. Bee Creek LLC gave an easement for Stinger, and then Bee Creek Partners built the road, and they're obligated to maintain the road. It's not a county road. It's not a public road. So Bee Creek Partners is not going to give Mr. Layton permission to put access on Stinger Road. Yet there's nothing in the Division 3 permit that talks about that. It just says the commercial drive shall be a minimum of 32 feet in width. Well, the Planning Commission didn't consider the fact that that's not accessible for this particular use. So if he's going to come off Bee Creek, if he's going to use an access off Bee Creek, the Planning Commission, I believe, felt like that was a dangerous condition and should not be granted because of the site distances and things of that nature. So I think that's the biggest, most glaring issue with regard to the face of the Division 3 permit on the access point, because the sketch plan wasn't given to the Planning Commission at the time they were considering all this. They got it after the fact. And so they didn't look at all those issues before they made their decision, which is, I think, enough for you guys to send it back to them or to reverse the decision and let the applicant try again. Now, I touched on the compatibility issue, and most of the conditions in the decision of record were to address those compatibility issues. They wanted to try to fix that or at least ameliorate people and make them feel better about having an auto service place so close to residential property. So they established conditions of buffering both to the west and to the north. And it says that there's going to be a 25-foot vegetative buffer to the north of this development. Well, you can see to the north, there's an existing gravel road that runs to a residence. You saw that probably on the overhead. There's a house behind this proposed area. And they've got, thank you, Bob. They've got, you see that one back, Bob. You had it right there. You can sort of see the residence back here where the cars parked, and they use that easement as access, and that's going to stay there on the development. So Mr. Layton is supposed to put a 25-foot vegetative buffer, and it's not clear from the Division 3 permit whether he's got to put it on the south side of that easement or on the north side of that easement, but whether he puts it on south or north, it doesn't really matter because he's going to change the sight line for that residential easement. driveway. If he runs that 25-foot vegetative buffer out to the setback, then you're not going to be able to see, whoever comes in and out of that residential property is not going to be able to see adequately north or south on Bee Creek. So there was testimony at the Planning Commission that it was hard to see anyway because of the topography. There's a hill there. If Mr. Layton does what the Planning Commission wants him to do, they're going to make it worse. So they're going to make it harder, not easier, to go across there. Now, I've got Exhibit 3, which is the road and bridge standards for driveways, and it's page 18. And the guidance code says that we're supposed to follow the road and bridge standards. And it says that you have to have a minimum sight distance on driveways at 200 feet at 30 miles per hour, 225 feet at 35 miles per hour. Bee Creek's 35 miles per hour. So you got to have a minimum sight distance of 225 feet. Well, if there's going to be a vegetative buffer either on the south or north of that private easement, it's going to be difficult to see how you're going to see 225 feet. So for that reason, we don't think that the Division 3 permit is permissible, and it violates the guidance code for those reasons. So to sum up, three reasons, really. We think it's incompatible. We can tell it's incompatible. We recognize the Planning Commission tried to address those incompatibility issues with the conditions. Those conditions did not meet those criteria because it's presumptively incompatible, and these buffering issues don't adequately address the compatibility problem, which is the safety and the traffic access points. The residential folks that are using these roads are going to be impacted by that additional use. And as I pointed out, we think that the proposed conditions not only didn't help the problem, they exacerbated the problem by decreasing the sightline distances on the current access point, the easement that's in existence, and by placing, or at least impliedly accepting, an access for Mr. Layton to put in that he can't put in. So the way the Division 3 record permit is written today, because it doesn't reference that sketch plan that he's got right here, he could put that 32-foot wide commercial access on Bee Creek. And that was never the proposal to the Planning Commission. That was never what they thought he was going to do. And that's what they told him they didn't want him to do. So this Division 3 permit's got to be given strong consideration on your part to fix that issue of these particular access points, or just simply reverse the decision because it doesn't adequately follow the development code in that it doesn't follow the road and bridge standards, it's incompatible, and it's a safety concern which hasn't been adequately addressed by the conditions. I'm done talking. I want to make sure that I've given you exhibit, was it four, Bob?
Yes.
Mr. Clemenson asked a question about it. I want to offer exhibit 3, which is just the page out of the road bridge showing the...
We have a copy of that.
Okay, thank you.
Questions?
And I will...
Mr. Wade.
Yes, sir.
A couple questions.
Tom?
Yeah.
I guess I'm a little unclear as to... let's go back to the vegetation thing.
Okay.
You're saying it's going to hinder the sight line where and who?
Because
here's what I'm going to say before you get started. They can't run the vegetation out past the easement, Bee Creek easement. So
you got to stay within the property.
You got to stay within the property line. So that's I can't see where that's going to hinder the sight line on.
Here's what I think.
From that residence coming out there, the vegetation.
Okay.
Two. My next question is then the way you're explaining this is then you're saying Stinger Road is not in compliance with sightline guidelines?
No, I'm saying Stinger Road is not accessible to Mr. Layton because it's a private road.
Okay. But you went into all the spill about the sight line coming out on Stinger Road and all this not being compliant. So I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to imply the sight line issue on Stinger Road, because I think that under the standards, the minimum distance for an access point from Bee Creek has got to be, I think, 115 feet, and he shows 134. So I think that's, as it's drawn, I think that's okay. The problem I wanted to point out was I don't think he can access Stinger Road because he can't put an access point there on that private easement unless he gets permission from my client to put it on there. And the fact that I'm standing here probably suggests to you they're not going to give him access to do that. The problem with the Vision 3 permit on that access issue is it clearly says you just have to have a commercial access that's 32 feet wide, but it doesn't say where it's supposed to be. That's what I meant. Does that make sense?
What you was talking about, okay. Sight lines that you now, went off on. I was trying to figure out what that had to do with the overall picture of it.
The sight line, I think, is affected by the vegetative buffer because the road curls on both, it sort of corners gently on both sides. And so even though you can't build the vegetative buffer up to the setback, I agree with you, you're still going to have to look back. And I think the vegetative buffer is going to be potentially an impediment there. Now, it's not built, so I guess neither one of us will know exactly. But I don't think it's going to help. And that was my point about that. And my concern about the sightline was the existing road for the residents that are coming in and out of that particular house you saw on Bob's overhead. But if he's allowed to put an access on Bee Creek, you're going to have the same problem with that access.
Questions? Mark?
Brian, I've got a question about the new exhibit that you brought to us. First, just a comment as far as the traffic study needed. My personal opinion, of course not. It's not a repair business. Very few cars are going to be coming out, you know, over a day, so that doesn't get anywhere with me. But if this truly was meant to be a private easement, you got my attention. But I've read this easement while you were talking, and I went to page 2 of the road easement, and item 2 on page 2 says the road shall be constructed by the first party, the terms and conditions of the agreement regarding the road are set forth in a separate development agreement between the parties. Time is of the essence. Upon completion of the construction, both parties shall cooperate in efforts to dedicate the easement to the appropriate governmental authority. So clearly the intention is that this is to be a public road. Both parties have agreed to that. Number 3, the item below it, ends with that exact same sentence. And they covenant to maintain it, but to dedicate it to the public, which gives the public the right, to give this easement or this right-of-way to break that easement to the public. Am I missing something?
Yes, it does say that. The parties, according to paragraph 3, the parties shall endeavor to dedicate this road easement to the appropriate governmental authority, in which case the parties shall be relieved of the responsibilities assumed by such governmental authority. So the intent of the parties, I think, was to turn it over to or dedicate it to the public so it would be maintained by the county and used by the public.
And it has to go to their standards.
And that was their intent. But it has not been. It has not been dedicated to the public or maintained by the county. Neither the county, it's not part of the county road system, and it has not been publicly platted. So neither of those things have happened for whatever reason. It's still a private easement with a private road on it.
Of course, we don't have a drawing showing that this is the easement that we're looking at, but I'm assuming that 50-foot is that state road.
It is. And the way that happened, you know, typically when we look at subdivisions, you know, a person like Eddie Wolf will prepare a plat. It will have all the roads on it. It says dedicated to the public. These roads will be dedicated. And the plat's then recorded and filed. So there's a presumption of a public road there. In this particular case, there was a plat recorded, didn't have any road on it. Then later, Bee Creek sells the easement to Bee Creek Partners. They have the easement that you see that's recorded with the recorder of deeds, but there is no update to the plat or change to the plat showing that it's dedicated to the public, and they never did. They didn't dedicate it to the public. So,
you know, I'm not smart enough to know if they've agreed to do all these things properly that are on here, Brian,
right.
Which is to build it correctly. And then if you keep reading, there's a procedure, if it's not built, that it will be, and the prevailing party, and who's going to pay. But it clearly says it's to be done, and it's their responsibility to get it dedicated to the public. Are they working on that, would be my question at this point. What have they done in the past year to make that happen?
Well, I don't know that they've done any. I don't think there's any evidence that they've proposed that it be a public road at all. What they have done is maintained the road. So I think that if the county were to say, I need this road as part of our county road system, I think they probably would turn it over as a public road. So I don't think that's happened. I don't think the county is interested in maintaining it. I think my client has to pay for it. And so I'm sure they want the benefit of having a private road on that particular road, 50-foot easement. Now, I think that, but I don't know that you have to address that issue today. I think maybe you've got to say, listen, Planning Commission, you've got to identify where that access is supposed to go. If you want it on Stinger, then you need to do two things. One, you need to put it in the decision of record, and two, you need to gather some evidence about whether you can put the access on Stinger Road. And maybe you're right. Maybe there is. Maybe Mr. Layton has permission from Bee Creek LLC. I don't think so, but maybe he's going to present that to the Planning Commission to their satisfaction, that he has the right of access, and he can put a 32-foot wide access point on Stinger Road. But I'm not sure you need to go through the brain damage of figuring that out, other than to say the division of record is incorrect as a matter of law because you don't identify where the access point should be. Now, we think you meant Stinger, but that's not what it says.
Could I clarify one issue?
Bob?
If I could, I've got a copy of the replat of Lot 1 of Snayden Subdivision, and it's a little difficult to read. But in this, at the time, the owner at the time was Bree Creek LLC, and the property owner at that time, Mr. Steve Redford, signed this basically saying that he is dedicating all streets, right-of-ways and roads shown herein are relinquished and dedicated to the use of the public. And so in my mind, it was basically dedicated to public use by the property owner at that time whenever this plat was filed and recorded with the Recorder of Deeds office.
That date is 2011. I don't want to throw water on Bob, but the easement's 2009, so I don't think that he could dedicate that after he sold it. But whether or not Mr. Redford did the right thing or the wrong thing there, I think that that issue ought to be fleshed out at the Planning Commission level to determine whether or not that access point, if they wanted the access point there, then they should say that in the division of record and further have some comfort in the fact that that access point could be put on Stinger Road. Right now, it's our position. It's private. It's a private easement, which they got, according to the record, in June 15, 2009. And the replat, I think, Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, was done in 2011.
I believe yeah. That's correct.
So, of course, that doesn't. I'm not sure that addresses the entire roadway either. But again, those are issues that we can flesh out at the Planning Commission if a new application is made.
But it's been 4 years and nobody's taken any action to make it a
public road?
Public road and turn it over to the county.
That is true.
Tom. Oh, Mark.
It says they're going to cooperate to make this a public road. To me, that's some evidence that at least one of the parties was cooperating to make it a public road and is accepted and signed.
You mean the Bee Creek LLC?
Gave the easement. I see signatures all over it and seals that it's properly recorded. I'd have to say at that time, from my reading of plats, that dedicates it to the public.
If he had the right to dedicate it, since he conveyed it 2 years prior.
He conveyed an easement, Brian, wouldn't he still have ownership?
He conveyed an easement for road purposes.
And wouldn't he still have ownership since he conveyed an easement?
He would have.
And he could convey the road at a later date.
He would have a servient ownership interest. He's already conveyed the roadway. So he'd have a servient, so he has a fee interest in it, but he's also, I sometimes get the dominant servient thing mixed up, but you know what I mean. Two people have an interest in that particular roadway, and he may have conveyed that interest of the roadway to somebody else. But again, I'm not trying to get into the legal aspects of that transaction tonight. I'm just asking you to look at this and say, wait a minute. I agree with you, Planning Commission, that access on Bee Creek is dangerous. And I think you did too, but you need to specifically identify where you want that access point. Mr. Layton shouldn't be given the latitude to put that access point wherever he wants.
Any questions, Tony? Would you go back to the slide that shows the property?
Yes. The site plan or the?
The site plan.
Okay.
That we've been looking at.
Sorry.
There. Well, there is nothing assuming that they cannot come in off of Stinger, and that's another question.
Right.
There is nothing to prevent them from coming in and getting a permit from MoDOT for another entrance to the east of the proposed parking area and eliminate the residential use. They wouldn't need that particular road. Would be one way to get around that obstacle, if that presents to be an obstacle.
I don't think they could put an access point that close to the easement. Now, if he could acquire the easement, that may solve the problem. Is that what you meant? I don't think you can put two access points that you can put them that close together under our guidance code and road and bridge standards. That's too close, I think.
I don't know myself.
Yeah.
But that is, you know.
Now, if he acquired the private residence easement, residential easement, he could probably do that. The problem with that was then you'd landlock the house behind him.
So, I mean, there's shared easements.
Yeah.
There's ways around
it. In your original discussion, you mentioned, and I correct me if I misread it or misheard you, that you consider the girls' and boys' home to be residential use?
I like residential use because we're talking about parents and children meeting and
well, they don't reside there overnight.
No.
And how many parking lots, how many parking spaces do they have in their parking lot? I mean, that's a busy business, in my opinion, even though it's a charitable, you know, it's a good cause, nothing to that. But I can't buy the fact that it's residential.
I think it's more likely to be compatible with residential than auto repair.
And then, do we have the size of the old building
yes.
that they're replacing with the new building that is, I would presume, would be quite a bit larger?
The existing facility is a 1,680 square foot facility, and the new facility, I am forgetting, the 40 by 130.
I think it's 5,000 feet.
Was it 52,000?
5,000,
I mean.
So the new facility is considerably
larger.
So it's
more than not quite three times as big as the other building, which indicates they obviously may be doing more with hiring employees.
I hope Mr. Layton is successful, but I don't presume to believe that that's going to increase make additional jobs for Layton Auto Service, nor has he said that.
Just conjecture. I mean, I've enlarged my building several times because I outgrew it. So, and I had more employees. Okay. Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Randy Renier. Am I pronouncing that right? Okay. Would you like to spell it for the record? I think everybody knows how to spell Wade. You spell it for the record.
R-E-N-Y-E-R.
Okay.
I have the existing residence across the street, just on the diagonal corner of where they're planning on putting this. My only real concern is if you look around this town at every automotive shop, Crawford's, all of them, you see dismantled cars. My backyard faces that. I brought pictures of my backyard to it if I'd like to bring them up and let you see them. I could not make P&Z on either occasion because I was out of town on business. I did write a letter. Don't know really what that had. My only concern is within that, and if they can do that, there's a vacant house just beside me, and they turn it into commercial. Pretty soon my real estate just keeps falling and falling as far as the value of reselling the house that I live in. That's my biggest concern, plus not being able to sit in my backyard or any of us other neighbors without listening to grinders, air tools, air compressors running. I ran an automotive shop in Kansas before I moved down here, so I know quite a bit about the automotive side and, you know, the noise and everything they are. I also know in the evenings a lot, you know, you do what you got to do to pay the bills, and if you've got a stack up and backlog of cars, you run through the evening to get them done. And my house, like I said, is a dead site, and it's just right about 160 feet from where the proposal is.
Can you point that out to us?
This one right here.
Thank you.
So, the other question, too, I will agree, is if there is to be an access onto Bee Creek, that will be dangerous because as I pull out of my driveway in the morning, if one of the residents is coming off that gravel drive that they have been talking about, several times I see somebody come over the hill and slam on the brakes to stop to miss them. On a rainy day, they actually slide in and almost go into the ditch sometimes because there is a pretty good-sized hill and a blind spot coming into that area. But that's my only really concern is, of course, like any of us others, our real estate value, and houses aren't cheap, and you can't afford to lose money. And if that can be done there, then the house beside me that's empty can become commercial, and pretty soon my house just keeps going down in value.
What was on that property before?
Where they're putting it?
Uh-huh.
Nothing. It's just a empty lot.
Didn't have a house on it previously or anything?
Where they're wanting to put the automotive shop?
Uh-huh.
Couldn't tell you.
Okay.
It's been empty since I've been there.
And how long has that been?
About 2.5 years.
Okay.
So.
Any questions?
I understood why you asked that question because of that cleared area. It looked like there might have been something there before, but I certainly didn't.
Yeah, I don't think. It doesn't look like there's ever been anything there. It's just.
Could have been a staging area for building the road or the easement.
Correct. Yeah. So.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Crystal Howell.
Hello, I'm Crystal Howell. I'm the property manager of Bee Creek Apartments. I manage over 224 apartment units at Bee Creek. The reason that I feel that you guys really need to look into a safety procedure, a safety study, you know, we have 224 apartment complexes. Each one of my residents, most of them, have two vehicles. That's over 400 vehicles that enter and exit off of and onto Bee Creek Road daily. And all the time, all my residents come to me and ask me, Crystal, do you think the state could put up a stoplight here? Do you think they could put a caution light? Because when people are coming from Bee Creek Road going south, I mean, you got a minute. No cars there. You have a minute to pull out right onto Bee Creek Road, and a car is right on your ass. And there's many times where I've pulled out, especially late at night, and you really can't see and almost gotten into a wreck. So I know that you all can sit up here and want to talk about how right you are of making your last decision on approving this Gail Layton business, but the bottom line is this. We have lives that go in and out of Singer Road on a daily basis, children that go out, you know, with their parents. I really urge you guys to really look into the safety issues and really get to know this road. I urge you to. And as you guys be in our commission, you know, we have a zoning commission to control the use of development and land in such a way to promote the community welfare and to protect the safety of all of us. I expect you guys to get to work and do that, please. Thank you.
Tom, go ahead.
When are they planning on the next phase of your project?
We do not have a next phase of the project.
Okay. And Bob, would you like to read the letter from MoDOT that addresses the traffic study?
I contacted MoDOT concerning the need for a traffic study for Mr. Layton's garage facility. And essentially, they indicated, they referred me to a Florida Department of Transportation modeling system. And essentially, when you plug the calculations into that, it would not generate the traffic that would warrant a traffic study. The thing that MoDOT did point out was that the apartment complex would, but that the garage would not.
Okay. So we have, staff has delved into that traffic question that came up. And I think we all, not a question of whether we're right or wrong, we're here to do a civic duty.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally know Bee Creek Road. I've been here since 72, and I lived out on Cherry Bee Road, and I watched the development as everybody's watched developments that occurred around this county. And the Bee Creek Road is essentially the same where it was in 1972. It may be slightly wider, but at least it's paved.
Yeah, it's paved, and they did widen it a little bit, but still they have no side, so if you have to veer off to the right or left a little bit, you can't.
Yep.
You're right in the ditch. You're flipping your car over. And it has changed because there's a 224 apartment complex that's been built there, so you have more traffic coming in and out of Bee Creek Road.
Right.
Along with the industrial park on the other end of it and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gail Layton, if you would like to talk, you don't necessarily have to. You've already been granted the right for the property, but if I notice your name was down. If you wanted to speak to us, you certainly can.
I don't have a lot to say. It was made pretty clear to me that the entrance was going to be on Stinger Road. So I don't know where they're coming up with that. I mean, that we talked about that pretty long time that night. Noise, I don't see how I'm going to affect anybody on noise. I live right, my shop's right behind this gentleman's. He should be able, Doug Lay used to live in that house. Doug never had a problem with any noise, and I would think he could hear it. I mean, I can hear Highway 65 from my place. But I was told in the very beginning that Stinger Road was a public road. In the very beginning, before I bought the land, I was told it was a public road. That easement to that property back there is on my land. So, I mean, I own the easement. I've already talked to those folks. They don't have a problem at all with me having a shop there. And I told them I would never create a problem, whether I, at the time, would have used that to come in. I told them I would never create a problem for them in or out. And, I mean, we have a pretty mutual agreement there between him. You know, like I say, they don't have a problem. He said he has more trouble with the cars racing up and down the street to the apartments. Now, Mr. Walker, one of the owners, came to my house a few weeks ago, a very nice gentleman, visited with me and my wife. My shop was open. It was a hot day. The doors were open. My son works for me. He was running air tools. I don't know if he can testify, but you couldn't hear it. My house is 40 feet from my shop building. And the first thing out of Mr. Walker was an offer to buy the land from me because they were wishing they had got that property. So there's more in this than what's being led on. Yeah. I don't know if you have any questions for me, but I'm trying to abide by what all the county wants me to do. But I've kind of stopped until this is done, so I know what, you know, if I can proceed with all the regulations that you want me to do.
Well, that's good that you're doing that. Who did you buy the property from?
Liberty Bank.
As a foreclosure?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and who was the previous owner of it?
I
not. It's not necessary.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not necessary. Okay. Mark?
There was mention before that you might be working late. What I saw, there were beginning hours and ending hours.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to live by the hours that you've committed?
Yeah, I mean, there might be times, you know, if somebody's broke down needing to get home, you know how that goes. They wheel in, it's 4 o'clock or 4:30 or whatever. Yeah, you might have to stay and get somebody done, or you might want to work in the evening if that's that big a deal. I mean, the doors can be down, but I mean, I'm not going to be open for
business.
You're not
going to be open the third shift.
No, I think it's 8 to 6, and we did that so people have time to get off work and come and pick the car up, and 8 to 3, I believe, on Saturday. And, you know, that may be flexible. It could be 8 to 12. I don't know, but that's how I wanted it set up. And the buffer deal, that already has a pretty good tree line and buffer on that north. I was going to put a privacy fence across the west side of the property. And again, the fellow that folks that live in the home adjoining the property, he really doesn't want a fence at all, but I told him, I said, that's a requirement by the county. I have to put one up. But I mean, that's a pretty good tree line across there. There's lots of shrubs. I had no plans of doing anything else on that north side of that easement up there, because nobody else. I mean, basically, the way I'm looking at what I'm wanting to put in, I'm going to have a pretty decent place. And yes, I agree with the gentleman about how some of the other guys' shops look. And it's not, that's not the way mine's going to be. Now, granted, there may be some cars parked to work on. I'm not a body shop. I'm not restoring cars like the guys are at Crawford's. That's a lot of the guy that owns it. That's a lot of cars that he's doing on his own. And, you know, that's his business. But I'm going to try and keep it as clean as possible so it looks nice as possible all the time.
And how many bays are you going to have in the new building?
I'm going to have 5 bays.
And you probably don't have that many now.
No, I mean, the way my building's set up now, I drive, you know, in lengthways. I mean, I've got 2 lifts in there. I mean, I can get 4 or 5 cars in, but you can't have, you know, I've only got room to get them a couple up at a time and do the work. My business, I've been very fortunate and blessed. It's grown. And I've got my son working for me. There will be more employees. I'm not going to say I'm going to have 10 employees, but I'm sure I'm going to need another one for sure when we get up there, but that's about the most I can see right now. But I'm hoping it does grow, yes. But it's also something that I'm either going to turn over to my son if he wants to stay in it, or, you know, whatever. I'm not planning on getting out of it for quite some time.
All right. Any questions further? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions for anybody that has already spoken? Okay. I'll close the meeting to public discussion then and let the board weigh in on what we've been listening to and being provided. Bob, you were at the planning meeting, planning and zoning. Were they just not explicit on which road entrance they were talking about?
I don't think in the decision of record that it was explicit, but the site plan was submitted at the date of the regular meeting when they voted, and basically my understanding was that they were basing that decision upon that site plan with an understanding that the entrance would be off of Stinger Road. The concern that the commission that was expressed by the commission was the fact that it was shown as a 27-foot wide entrance, and I believe they wanted to ensure that it was, I believe, a 32-foot wide entrance, but they were basing it off of that site plan, even though it wasn't specifically denoted.
Okay. Should it be so stated in the decision of record? Or is the site plan not part of the decision of record? Help us.
I really feel it could be denoted, and it might be wise for it to be denoted.
I'm sorry, Tom.
And it's in one of the requirements that they're supposed to meet in 32 foot in width.
Yeah.
It was on the number 11
in here.
The planning and zoning was meet. That was a stipulation that they put in, wasn't it? Didn't it?
Yes.
I'm sorry, we're not unless we call on you.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Any discussion, further discussion?
I've got a little more discussion on the road easement.
Sure.
My take is it's a road. My reasons for that is you can grant an easement, and this was not an exclusive easement. It was an easement for them and their assigns to get on the property and utilize it. I don't see anything in here that restricts them from giving this right of way to anyone else or the public. And I believe as the owner of the land, that happened in 11 when Mr. Redford dedicated it to the city. I further believe that Stinger Road is a safer location for that access point. And if that's the site plan that was turned in that they were looking at, I'm comfortable with the plan that was presented by the Leightons.
All right.
And one more comment. I do think there is compatibility with the storage structure next door across Stinger Road.
I also do, too.
Okay. Any further comments? Would there be a motion to be made to grant approval of the appeal or deny the appeal request?
Mr. Chairman, I'd make a motion to deny the appeal of the Planning Commission's decision.
I'll second.
All right. So you're basically upholding their decision?
Correct.
All right. Any further discussion at all? Call for the vote then. Mark, you made the motion. How would you vote?
I'd vote in support of the motion to deny.
Thank you. Tom?
To deny.
Thank you. Tony?
To deny.
And Chairman, likewise. I'm sure that you have an issue that will probably go a little bit further than this, and that may be the necessary steps. But you do have that recourse to take it further than what our decision is.
Thank you.
And we'll move to the next case on the docket, 7M Holdings.
Okay. This is case number 2013-8V. It's the project is 7M Holdings, LLC, variance request. The applicant is 7M Holdings, LLC.
Can we have some quiet, please?
The representatives are Mike Patterson and Eddie Wolf. This is the subject property in question. The location, this is a large portion of Thunder Ridge Estates, located on Thunder Ridge Court, Rainfall Circle, and Sunrise Villa Drive, off of Thunder Ridge Estates Drive, off of Bee Creek Road. It's in the Branson Township, Section 16, Township 23, Range 21. And this is the original plat of Deer Creek Estates and Thunder Ridge Estates, or the preliminary plat, I apologize. The request, the applicant, 7M Holdings, LLC, is requesting a series of variances from Section 9, Table 1, Property Line Setbacks of the Taney County Development Guidance Code, and also Section 9, Table 3.9 of the Taney County Road Standards. The background on this, on September 18, 2006, the Planning Commission approved Division 3 Permit 2006-48, authorizing the development of Thunder Ridge Estates, containing a total of 43 residential lots and 17 duplexes platted into 34 condominium units on a total of approximately 27.06 acres. This is actually the preliminary plat, but it actually indicates both subdivisions. Essentially, Thunder Ridge Estates is the southern portion of this, as originally shown in the preliminary plat. This area here was actually the condominium section, the 17 duplexes, with the residential portion of the development being located here. On November 14, 2007, the final plat of Thunder Ridge Estates Phase 1 was filed with the Taney County Recorder of Deeds Office upon the administrative approval of the planning administrator, creating a 24-lot residential subdivision. And on November 1, 2007, Division 2 Permit 2007-89 was issued, authorizing the construction of two duplex buildings within Thunder Ridge Estates. These two duplex condominium buildings were originally approved as two of the 17 duplexes that were to be held in condominium-style ownership. It does appear that in 2007, the two duplex units were sold by deed only via a meets and bounds property description. Both the platted and unplatted portions of Thunder Ridge Estates were foreclosed upon by the bank. Earlier this year, 7M Holdings, LLC, purchased a number of the platted lots and also the remaining unplatted portion of the development from the bank. Currently, 7M Holdings, LLC, owns 13 of the platted lots within Thunder Ridge Estates Phase 1, as well as the remaining unplatted property within the development. What I've done to try to make it a little easier to decipher, all of the highlighted properties are really the properties that are a part of this variance request. For some reason, this one highlighted blue, but basically they own each of these lots. There's a separate owner of this one, separate owner of these, and, of course, separate owners of all of these building structures that have already been constructed. But essentially, everything else in the development is owned by 7M Holdings.
Where are the 17 lots that were originally plotted for the condominium type?
They were supposed to be down in this area. They were
unplatted.
And so they're really unplatted, yeah, at this point. It appears from our research that they've sold the two duplexes that were constructed by deed only, unfortunately. The existing single-family residences within Thunder Ridge Estates have been permitted by the Planning Department office, but unfortunately, it appears that most of these, for whatever reason, do not meet the front setback requirements. The vast majority of the current residences within the subdivision would not meet the setback requirements. most of those permits were issued in 2009 and 2010. The general description on this, the applicant, 7M Holdings, LLC, is requesting a series of variances, series of property line setback variances from the Development Guidance Code, and also a right-of-way width variance from the Taney County Road Standards. The applicant's requesting an 8-foot front of lot setback variance on the following lots enumerated below. The lots in question are lot numbers 31, 47, 50, 51, 53, 54, 55, and 56, basically is enumerated on the final plat of Thunder Ridge Estates Phase 1. So essentially what the developer is asking for an 8-foot front setback variance on the remaining lots within Thunder Ridge Estates Phase 1. Secondly, the applicant is also requesting the same 8-foot front of lot setback variance on the unplatted portion of the single-family residential development, which would essentially allow future single-family residences to be constructed at the same 17-foot front setback. Then thirdly, the applicant is requesting a series of front-of-lot setback variances within the unplatted portion of the development that would be utilized for the 11 remaining duplexes to be constructed, as enumerated on a survey on the following slide. The proposed duplex front-of-lot setbacks have been enumerated on this slide. The variances actually vary somewhat. I tried to just list them. This is basically indicating the variance requested and then the setback that would remain if this variance application were granted. Finally, the applicant is also requesting a variance from the provisions of Section 9, Table 3.9, right-of-way and width of the Taney County Road Standards, basically allowing for a 20-foot right-of-way width variance, allowing the right-of-way width to be platted at 30 feet within essentially the duplex portion of the development, or this portion of the development here, as depicted on this survey. Essentially, it's my understanding that the rest of the development, that this area has already been platted with a 50-foot right-of-way. In review, the applicant is requesting a series of variances from Section 9, Table 1, Property Line Setbacks of the Development Guidance Code, and also Section 9, Table 3.9 of the Taney County Road Standards. The completion of the development of the Thunder Ridge Estate subdivision is limited by both the existing layout of the subdivision and also the topography of the site. The majority of the existing lots drop off quickly toward the rear of each lot. The majority of the existing permitted single-family residential structures do not meet the front lot setback requirements. The applicant wishes for the front setbacks of the new residences to match those of the existing homes. The duplex portion of the development was initially intended to be held in a condominium style of ownership. And in Taney County, it has been generally accepted practice in a condominium style of ownership to allow for the development with lots that basically don't necessarily meet the setback, road frontage, and or minimum lot size requirements, really basically because each of the lots are held by a condominium association as common property. However, due to the difficulty in obtaining bank financing for a condominium project, the applicant is proposing to replat the duplex development in a traditional form of ownership. The staff recommendations on this: if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this variance request, the following requirements shall apply unless revised by the board. First, approval of a front of lot setback variance of 8 feet for lot numbers 31, 47, 50, 51, 53, 54, 55, and 56 of Thunder Ridge Estates Phase 1, allowing each of the single-family residences to be constructed 17 feet at the closest point from the front property line. Second, approval of a front-of-lot setback variance of 8 feet for the unplatted single-family portion of Thunder Ridge Estates, allowing future single-family residences to be constructed also 17 feet at the closest point from the front property line. Number three, approval of a series of front-of-lot setback variances, allowing the unplatted duplex portion of the Thunder Ridge Estates to be platted with the following setback variances, as enumerated in the chart. Four, approval of a 20-foot right-of-way width variance, allowing the right-of-way width to be platted at 30 feet within, within the duplex portion of the development, as enumerated on the survey from Wolf Surveying. Fifth, compliance with all other provisions of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. And sixth, the decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder of Deeds Office within 120 days, or the approval shall expire. On this one, we've put together a brief video because of the size of the development. We've really tried to drive a lot of this just to give you a basic understanding of what we're looking at. If I recall correctly, I'm trying to remember, some of this was the unplatted portion. Is that correct? Or was that the platted? That's part of the platted portion. And we've essentially just tried to drive a lot of the subdivision just to give you an idea of, Fortunately, it was kind of a cloudy day, so I don't know how well this will show up, but
it's a Bob, is there still a top layer of asphalt that needs to go down?
There is. It does appear that they just put down the initial layer of asphalt. You're exactly correct, but not that final layer. These are actually some of the lots. There are a certain number of lots, and I didn't point that out. I can kind of point that out in a second, in the center of the development where they are going to be able to meet the setback requirements. And this is another one that will meet the setback requirements. And this is actually, this was originally supposed to be the condominium portion of the development with the duplexes or townhouses. And essentially, at this point, the applicant is seeking to plat those as more of a traditional development, not being held in condominium style of ownership. I'm having technical difficulties here. We may have to, I don't know exactly.
Is there more or just not?
Oh, okay. There's not a whole lot more there, honestly. May have to just try to. Shoot. Well, this thing's just kind of... We may have to continue without the computer for a second.
I don't know if we can read or not. Eddie, would you like to rise? I swear you in. I solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Come forward. Just an aside, do you know that Christmas comes in December, not in November?
That's true.
Wow, what are you asking for here?
Well, they're, you know, this is one of these repoed subdivisions that had approvals to do all of it. All the roads were put in, all the utilities were put in, and everything. And then, as time has went on, they built those two duplexes. The title company transferred ownership when they weren't supposed to without them being platted. There was no association set up for the two buildings. They're just sitting there. There's no restrictions on them or anything. Because there was supposed to be a condominium development set up there with the association and everything to comply with the Division 3 permit, which it wasn't. And we got one titling company in town that's very famous for doing this. And so when I see this, it's not hard to figure out which one did it. But so we got two non-compliance buildings there. Then we get into the residential. We got numerous non-complying houses with setbacks. And I think one reason that we've got some of those non-compliance is maybe the county wasn't paying attention when they issued the permits. Don't know. You know, it happened. But, you know, terrain is a big factor out there. You can see from the video that the road's flat. It goes just a very few feet, and then it just goes like this down. Well, if somebody out there buys a lot and they build a house and nobody's looking after them, they're going to build that house probably the cheapest way they can, and that's not to pour a 20-foot stem wall. You pour a 12-foot stem wall. And so that's kind of what's happened out there with a lot of this is through the 5 or 6 years that we went through, and there have been a few homes built. I think Brian Starkey built a few of those out there. The one that's got right there with the White River building, I was trying to Cross Creek. He's building in there now presently. But I think he built 4 or 5 of those in there in that area. Been 2 or 3 different small developers come in and build a couple, leave, build a couple, leave. Until we've got a hodgepodge in there now that we can't get in compliance. So do you take a row of lots that's got a house in the middle of it that's set at 17 feet and then suck the rest of them 8 foot behind it? You know, it's going to look pretty bad. It doesn't hurt anything because it's already done. Then on the unplatted part, the terrain is really the issue there, trying to build affordable homes with the steepness of that ground in there, because it will cause a lot of extra cost involved trying to build those homes. And over in the duplex part, we're not trying to reduce the road widths. It'll still have the same amount of pavement, still have the curbs the same distance, which are already existing, 20-foot back-to-back curbs. The only reason that we're asking for the variance for the road, if we'd have room, we'd put a 50-foot road in there. But we're already restricted by those other buildings. We can't do that. And so it makes sense in there to do 0 lot lines on the buildings. The excavation for the pads has already been done. You can't go any farther to the south because of that rock wall. And I believe in the original Division 3 permit application, there was a big buffer left on the south side against that residential area, and that's about where that tree line is. So we can't go any farther back there, and the pad's already excavated where you can just go in there and build, and across the road there, you got the terrain again. So it's, you know, it may be like we're asking for Christmas, but we're trying to deal with the situation as it exists out there on the ground with a development that was distressed, and we don't want another one that's distressed, and they're trying to do something with it. And then the other thing that we're doing
there was, we got a picture again. There where it says rainfall right there, on the south side of that street, that was approved for duplexes in the original Division 3. And then that corner right there to the west, where it kind of makes a triangle right there, that was approved for a duplex. We're not wanting to build duplexes in there. We're going to reduce the number of units, put single family in there where all the single families up there together. We don't want duplexes up there with the single family stuff. So we're giving up, you know, at least two buildings there because we can't get the amount of residential in there that the duplex is yielded because there's a couple of sewer easements and a storm drain easement that's not shown on that that comes into play there to where you can't do it with residential and get as many units. So it's going to make more space in there. And we're really not trying to change the road system or anything that's there. The developer is going to have to improve everything to county code when he plats the rest of it. But it makes sense in there with the condominium part of it, since it's already completely out of hand with those two buildings not being platted and out of compliance, that we try to get the rest of it in compliance with the variance for the road and plat them as like single family lots where they can be sold and there won't be a condominium association out there, period. It'll be a homeowners association for the whole subdivision. That's what it'll amount to. And I never have come to this board and asked for it, but we've done several of these in Stone County and they've worked real well on these developments that's like this here that banks have taken back. They have sold well, and everything, and the people's got a piece of ground where they're building. They're not, and it doesn't turn into a rental park. You know, you've got, you know, ownership there to where if these are built as condominiums, you can't finance them, so they're going to turn into rentals is what's going to happen. And I think it'd be a lot better neighborhood if we could go in there and make it all single family and to where it complies with each other instead of having two different uses in there on the same piece of ground. And I feel that we've got the evidence that we need there with what is already built, instead of trying to recreate the wheel, use what's there, and comply with the code the best we can. And because all the utilities are in, been tested, all that's got to be done now is put the final coat of asphalt on some of the roads, and then the lower road there in that other phase, it never has been constructed and left to be completely built on it. And but that's kind of what we're asking for in there. And so I've worked with Bob and done a real detailed drawing where he could really look at these duplexes and see what it would do to them. It'll turn them into single family. And that's why we got that big chart, so that we know we're not guessing saying we want 10 foot through the whole thing. That's what is actually there. Because like if you look at the video where it kind of quit, this rock wall comes all the way through there, and this big buffer was supposed to be left in there against this residential area down here where they approved it. And utilities are all in there. And these here, if you went to a 50-foot road, I would have to come to you and ask you for a variance, because couldn't put a 50-foot road in here the way these two are already out of. So the hardship's been created by ignorance of people not following the code in the past.
Okay.
And this up here is where I was talking about. There was a duplex sitting here, a duplex sitting there, and then two duplexes sitting over here. So we're actually losing two full buildings and going with residential in here instead of doing duplexes, which that is just a planning process through the Division 3 permit that we're allowed to go down in density and plat a single family where we don't need a variance, but we can just simply do that by code.
Okay, questions?
I've got a parking question. It came up during the video when they went by those two existing duplexes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if those were contractor trucks or who was there, but it looked like a pretty narrow road. How many parking places are there off-road for each side of the duplex, for each unit?
They've got garages on them, so they can be two pulling the garage and two parking the driveway.
Okay. Because I saw there's just
yeah.
length for a normal sized car in there.
Well, when you get, you know, like here,
I've got a laser pointer up there, too, if you want. It's a little bitty guy.
Oh, well, you do.
It's a teeny tiny little thing.
Okay. But, you know, the garage is here, so, you know, you can park inside. And you got the driveways here and everything to park in. And, you know, they're parking on the street here, which in these residential subdivisions, how do you stop it? You know, they could park all those vehicles there in that driveway if they parked in there correctly.
So those are two-car garages
yeah.
meeting together.
Yeah.
These new ones you propose, those garages are on opposite ends of each other, right? No, they're not.
Right now, what I've done, and I'm going to be truthful with you, this is, I asked the developer what they wanted to build size-wise. And they told me this box here would consume what they wanted to build.
So you don't know whether it's
I don't know if they're one way
drive or
yeah. I don't know.
Opposite end.
Because what I tried to do here is to pick a center wall. And to get a box that would encompass the whole house, the whole duplex. And that's what I've tried to accomplish here. By that, I don't know. It won't, from my understanding, is there going to be a smaller unit than these. Because these are so big, it's not feasible to rent them, not feasible to sell them. So you got to get something there that's marketable. And I think these are around 1,800. Is that right?
1,500.
Yeah. And you want to go down to a 13.
Well, these R's are 15, the others are 32.
Right. So, want to go down to a smaller unit in there, which will help out some too.
Is the eastern road that goes up on the diagonal, is that in or is that proposed?
You mean up here, Dave?
Sorry, let me.
The hammerhead?
Or, you just lost it, Bob.
Okay, sorry. Go back. Let me go back. Sorry.
You talk about this one here?
No, the proposed one that goes up the.
Here,
uh-huh.
That's a sewer easement.
That's a sewer easement?
Yeah, this is the existing sewer easement that's granted to the city right there.
I was reading that as a road.
Actually, let me explain the drawing a little bit. These shaded areas are all existing easements.
Okay.
Those are to be platted. Well, some of them are existing and some's got to be platted. But that's where the sewer line and water lines exist through on some of that is where that shaded area is. It's not a road in any way. The road is depicted, if you see this little dash line right there, that's the center line of the road, and these are the curbs.
I apologize for the question, because it's right on the piece of paper I'm looking at.
Well, you know, word of mouth is always the best. But that's what we're asking for and why we're asking for it, is topography, with the ignorance of what's been done in there prior, and we're just trying to get something that will work to make this development grow, do what it's supposed to, and get it in there properly, the best we can.
Mark? I think you've answered some of my questions, but I want to be real clear. The reason we cannot go further to what appears to me to be the south mm-hmm. is because not just the rock wall and take further cut, but there is a commitment to keep a buffer in that area from the adjoining.
Yeah, I'm trying to, from memory, it seems to me like it's 35 or 40 feet that, and I think it was 40 foot that the board asked to leave there because Sean, when he was on the board, he lives out there in that area. So, you know, the developer conceded to give that big buffer there because there is houses right there.
Okay. And I understand that at the time this was done, we didn't have a duplex regulation, so you couldn't have come in and asked for a duplex regulation at
yeah.
that time.
The only choice we had was a condominium or not do them.
And I also understand the difficulty of financing those situations today, and today we do have a duplex.
Well, to give you an example.
Some of this has been created. I'm glad that the county has a program for duplexes today that wasn't available to the developer, at the first developer, mm-hmm. At the time this was created.
Another there question, was a. Just to give you an example, there was a distressed property in Stone County that had sat there completely built, four buildings. There's people with $100,000 down payments and couldn't get financing for condominiums. We went in and zero lot lined them and platted them. They were all gone in 2 weeks, and they were bank-owned properties. Wow. That's how bad it is.
Another question is, I understand that for whatever reason, I don't know if the county dropped the ball or the county regulated it, and then the builder did it differently, you know, than was, you know, agreed to. Mm-hmm. But you've got these homes already built that don't meet, you know, the setback requirement.
Well, we've not only got homes, but we got
two. Maybe it looks nice for them to be in a row, but, you know, we've all seen subdivisions where they don't as well. But the one that really caught my attention when I just saw it on the one piece of paper was the one where you're asking for a 20-foot variance and just a 5-foot setback.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a lot at the end of a cul-de-sac. Could you explain lot 11?
That one there?
I believe it's there.
I think the closest point in there, Mark, is this one right there. Maybe.
Which one were?
Yeah, I think it's this one. I think you're correct.
And let me explain here. This is a box that we're putting to consume the building. That may be a jog down in the building when it gets designed. I don't know. We're just trying to cover everything as we go. But the curvature of the road and where this rock wall is right there in the buffer, we don't have a place choice for where we place it. That's where it's got to go.
I was wanting to see if it affect the lot right next door to it and you know, their view.
You mean down here?
Yeah, there's no lot right next to that point, correct? There'll be no building. That's the green space?
Well, what I'm saying is this box is the building they're wanting to build will sit inside this box.
And you don't know exactly how the...
Yeah, it may be that this corner's got a cut out of it. You know, I don't know how it'll be designed. I really can't tell you that.
The land immediately to the right of that?
Here?
Yeah. Between the hammerhead and that box, that will not be developed, is my question.
Yeah, the hammerhead be put in. It's got a...
You've got that green space. That would be his side yard, not another lot for a building.
That's correct. No, there will not be any consideration for any other buildings in here other than what I'm showing you. That's it. And like I said, we went down in density two buildings already.
I see that was just a dimension going down. It almost looked like you're creating another lot there.
Yeah. Well, it's what it is. What we tried to give Bob, so we could get through this, is we give a dimension, and that dashed line is from that corner to this property line, and there's one right here, too.
Yeah.
So that way Bob could see how far we are off that so we know that we're in compliance with a Division 3 decision in there. Because there's no way now, since the title, what happens on this is the developer wants to break ground on this building here. He comes to me and wants a preliminary plat for financial purposes with the bank. So we cut him a legal description of the proposed area where that building's going to sit. They build a building. Then they're supposed to come back to us. We go in and plat the building. We set up the association with an attorney. Then this becomes units 1 and 2 of Thunder Ridge Condominiums. Well, these got built. The developer went under. The bank took it. And now that's what we got.
Mr. Chairman.
Mark?
I do like the idea that it will not be a condominium, because if it was left just on those four unit owners or those two duplex owners to maintain that road and do the things the association would, that would be one bankrupt association very quickly.
It's not big enough to maintain the road. I mean, you know, truthfully, these small condominiums cannot sustain themselves with very few units.
The assessment.
My only comment early on was that we normally don't allow unplatted portions to be allowed variance requests without the plat itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't really plat it.
I understand. Then you come to us, and then we make the variance request. But I can see the logic in expediting and eliminating.
The single family, I'll stress on the single family, we got a preliminary plat that dictates what it'll look like, because we've got to follow the development code, and that's what was approved. So all the single-family lots will be exactly, and actually you've got a plat of the duplexes. The only thing is we're going down to a smaller building, but the preliminary plat's got all the duplexes on it, too. That was approved. So we've actually got a preliminary plat that has it all on there like that there. The only thing is the way it got built on the end out there is with a hammerhead instead of the way that necks up to the northeast. But anyhow, that's what we're asking for, and I hope I explained it good enough or to make a decision on it. And if you got any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Any further questions? anybody? Okay. Sensing a need of motion.
Make a motion to approve the variances that's requested.
I'll second that motion.
As presented? In the,
as presented.
Okay. For motion been made and seconded, any discussion? All right, hearing none. Call for the vote. Tom?
For the motion.
For the motion. Mark?
For the motion.
Tony?
For the motion.
And the chairman would also say aye for the motion. So, no, we don't have one more thing.
Merry Christmas.
Beg your pardon?
You didn't add in for variance for the rope width. He was asking for that because if the variances don't do us no good on the duplexes unless we get the variance for the smaller rope right.
Did we not even make it all?
I thought it was presented.
It's in the decision of record, though.
As inclusive, yeah,
it's number four in the.
You asked for a separate vote. My understanding is we just gave you the vote for all of it.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure we had everything. I didn't want to come back.
I was trying to wrap it all into one.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Very good. And our final case is Hugh and Sharon Aldridge.
Okay. This is case number 2013-9V. This is Hugh and Sharon Aldridge, setback variance. The applicants are Hugh and Sharon Aldridge. And this property is located right about here. It's the location is 152 and 166 Vicewood Drive, Hollister, Missouri. It's in the Oliver Township, Section 35, Township 22, Range 22. The applicants, Hugh and Sharon Aldridge, are requesting a variance from the provisions of Section 7, Table 1, the setbacks of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. The applicants are requesting a variance from the required 5-foot rear lot of setback variance in order to allow for the placement of two accessory buildings. The background on this, the subject property is described as all of lots 3, 4, 5, 16, 17, and 18 in Block 12 of Arcadia Landing Subdivision, containing a total of approximately 17,500 square feet. The applicants purchased the property in January of this year in order to utilize it as their retirement home. The property in question currently contains a 1,904 square foot single family residence and a 924 square foot mobile home and a carport. The applicants have indicated that upon the purchase of the property in January of this year, they were forced to replace the existing septic system with an advanced on-site wastewater treatment system. The applicants are now seeking a rear setback variance in order to allow for the placement of two accessory buildings in an area that will be outside of the wastewater drip field. Again, the subject property is located at 152 and 166 Spicewood Drive and is described as lots 3, 4, 5, 16, 17, and 18 in Block 12 of Arcadia Landing Subdivision. The applicants, again, are seeking a rear setback variance. The applicants are wishing to construct two accessory buildings on the property in question. It's my understanding that the first accessory building will be 12 foot by 24 foot and would be constructed near the northwest corner of the property. And the applicants are requesting a 5-foot setback variance from the north or rear property line, allowing for the placement of the first accessory structure adjoining the rear property line. The applicants are wishing to place the second accessory structure near the rear center of the property, and they're requesting a 3-foot setback variance from the north rear property line, allowing for the second accessory structure. Upon purchasing the property in January of this year, again, the applicants were forced to replace the existing broken septic tank with an aeration drip wastewater treatment system. The installation of the new wastewater treatment system required the removal of a number of trees and also two existing accessory structures from the wooded backyard in order to provide for a suitable area for the required lateral drip field. Buildings cannot be placed over the strip lateral field area. The drip field area has been enumerated below. Basically, I had asked Scott Sterrett, the wastewater permitting person, if he could sketch in the approximate location of the drip field and also the wastewater tanks as well. The applicants have indicated that they will utilize each of the accessory structures for hobby, storage, and possible income creation during retirement. And I've kind of blown this up a little bit better. I'll let the applicant explain exactly where the structures will be proposed, but it's my understanding, first off, they would essentially have to be outside of this drip field area, and it's my understanding that they would be located to the rear of the lot. There would be two of those. The staff recommendations on this: if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this variance request, the following requirements shall apply unless revised by the board. First, approval of a setback variance of 5 feet from the north rear property line, allowing for the placement of the first accessory structure adjoining the rear property line. Approval of a setback variance of 3 feet from the north rear property line, allowing a second accessory structure to be located 2 feet at the closest point from the rear property line. Third, compliance with all other provisions of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. And fourth, the decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days or the approval shall expire. I did neglect to point out one other issue. There's just a tiny area of this corner that's considered FEMA floodplain as well. The applicant, she has basically, when they came in and installed this drip irrigation field, they built this entire area up, but FEMA would still consider this corner of the lot to be floodplain. And we've got just a brief video, and I will not mess with it this time, so we don't have any issues. But I've tried to take a video basically walking around the property in question. You'll see that the this wastewater system was installed pretty recently, and so you can really see that at the time we shot the video, it had recently, I assume, been strawed and seeded and everything. This is the wastewater tanks themselves are located here, and like I said, it is my understanding that a lot of the area through here is basically utilized as the drip field or the lateral field. It's my understanding that the only location that we would really have would be to the rear of the property, which would get into the rear setback. The applicant also provided me with some photos as well. I'll kind of pass those over while you're looking at the video as well. And like I said, both the existing residents and the existing mobile home are both on the same parcel, and they both share the same wastewater system as well. And that's one reason for the larger system, the larger amount of lateral field. And so really, both structures are located on the same parcel, including this carport as well. and this is the adjoining property.
Okay. Any questions for staff? Okay. And Sharon Aldridge?
Yes, sir.
Raise your right hand. You promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self God?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Just a comment, it is really refreshing to see survey stakes up rather than a building.
Is there any way to mitigate the FEMA determination now that the property has been raised up 4 to 5 feet?
The only way you really can, that you can remove an area, is you would have to actually complete a LOMA, a letter of map amendment, and it would require a surveyor or engineer to submit documentation to FEMA to actually have that removed.
I might want to look into that later. Do I need a permit or, sir? No?
No.
don't get that.
Chairman, if I could make a comment here.
Sure.
Very expensive. That process. Just
that's what I was going to say.
Kaufman, who built Branson Landing, how long one
large can of worms?
It
really is.
Okay, I'll leave that alone.
If there's any way of building outside of the floodplain, it's honestly easiest.
I will.
Or up to the level, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah,
the entire yard has been raised.
She would have to have an elevation certificate. And
oh,
so
my.
I was hopeful. She wanted to stay away from engineering or surveying.
Yeah, I think we can do that. I think we can probably be content with putting the edge of the building, like, right there. I think I can manage that.
It should be pointed out that the 32 acres to the immediate west is all government land.
Yes, that's correct.
That's a pretty good buffer in itself.
Yeah, I've got a string along there that all that is Corps of Engineers, is it not?
Yes.
Okay. No, I kept George Youngblood did my excavation and put the system in, and I basically told him that if he cut down a tree that was on Corps property, darn. I was watching him do it, sir, and I told him not to.
Yes, you do not want to get over the Corps
no,
of Engineers.
I went out there and strung the line from the existing posts all the way down and around to make sure he. And actually, the buildup is already 3 feet because he built it on a slant in toward the property itself. So if I am on the top edge of what's built up, there's nothing out there but thin air for 4 feet down, and I'm going to keep it trimmed so that I can always keep an eye on that retaining area. I don't want it shifting out from underneath my yard or my septic or my building. So, and I'm not building anything. They're going to be pre-built and brought in and put on slabs. Not full slabs, but the 2-foot by 2-foot jobs.
It's my understanding that these will essentially be runners.
Yeah, they're on runners. They're built that way.
And so...
like a Cedar Ridge building or something.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, we obviously see the need that you were forced to update your lateral field and put in the tanks.
And the 88-year-old woman that I bought it from swore she had never had a problem with that septic. Well, of course she didn't. Well. It was going in the yard, and she had the most gorgeous cedar trees. When George and I dug down that far, we hit sewer water. So, yeah.
I commend you for putting in the it's a nice system.
Well, I had to go gold mining. My husband's still out working. He's a pilot on the river. He says, honey, please try to win this tonight so that I'm not out here for nothing.
I think we can go ahead and make a motion, can we not? Without any further explanation from Ms. Aldridge?
I'll make the motion to approve. Second.
Motion been made by Tom to approve the variance requests and seconded by Tony. Tom, how would you vote?
For the variance request.
Tony?
For the variance request.
Mark?
For the variance request.
And likewise for the chairman, so you are